So, Dhamma talks. Dhamma is Pali language, the language of the teachings of the Buddha. Many meanings of the word Dhamma, but it's mostly means the way things are, the truth of things. So a Dhamma talk is just a talk about, an explanatory talk about the teachings, the practices, how your life works. And so these talks are meant to instruct, meant to inspire, and meant to really explain and put, you know, practicing into the context of life. Why do we do this? How does this work? What's the point of this? It should come first, and then we should practice after that, but maybe tomorrow morning I'll talk first. So first of all, let's begin with the first two stanzas of the Dhammapada. Dhamma, the same word, Dhamma, the way things are. Pada is another Pali word meaning path, journey. The Dhammapada is the most translated text of the teachings of the Buddha that there is. It's been translated hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. It's shortish, a group of stanzas, verses. The first two are translated something like this. He or she who thinks and acts with an untrained mind will have unhappiness or stress follow her and him all the days of her life, like an ox cart following an ox. That's, I would call, burdensome. Second stanza, he or she who acts with a trained mind, however, will have happiness follow her every day of her life like a shadow. When your shadow, and this is of course India, so it's presumably sunny a lot, lots of shadows effortlessly following. So this point is about the burden and drag of having an untrained mind and the joy and the light-hearted footedness of having a trained mind. So, meaning, of course, we have trained our minds in tons of ways. It's not like we're idiots, but we nevertheless the trained in meditation mind. The mind that, when trained, can, as I was talking, when I was talking with you this morning, I didn't ask your name. What's your name?
Cora.
Cora? Coral. Coral, as in reef?
As in reef.
Coral's question, and I was answering her quite at length about having a mind that behaves itself, the trained mind that we can train to think certain things, can have certain attitudes, brings such a sense of peace and well-being, whereas one that doesn't is running us. So that's the first piece of information. I'm going to weave them together. The second is that the fact of the matter on this plane where we live as human beings are that life is sometimes joyous and beautiful, sometimes medium, ordinary, and sometimes really difficult and really unpleasant. This is the way it is. I don't know about supposed to be, because I don't know who would suppose anything, but this is the way it is. And in the Buddhist, the way the Buddha described this was there are these eight vicissitudes. I know many of you have heard them many times, but we don't really believe them, so. There is pleasure and there is pain. There is loss and there is gain. There is praise and there is blame. And there is fame and there is ill repute, the opposite. So praise and blame are personal, and fame and ill repute are the same thing, but publicly. National Enquirer, all that. The news, gossip. They all come under pleasure and pain. Our life goes up and our life goes down. And this is the way it is, and it will always be this way. We don't believe it. If we believed it, we wouldn't be always trying to make it be what it isn't. We always want it to be going up forever. And when it goes down, we complain and think something's gone wrong. And when it goes up, we think it should stay that way. And when it comes down again and even levels out again, something's been lost, we think, because we don't really get that. But we need to really get that's the fact. What happens with, and we now, as human beings, have evolved these brilliant neocortices, really very sophisticated brains. which do an extraordinarily efficient job of relating to the ups and the downs in a way to try and help us bring us the most comfort. So when it goes up, our little brain is very busily maximizing that. And when it goes down, it's very busily trying to avoid or get rid of or change or fix that. And we do that constantly. That's what we're doing. And we do it very well. So look at us here, comfortable and well-fed and peaceable and housed and with a measure of reasonable friends and occupations and incomes and blah, 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 on a range of things, of course. But on the whole, we've done very well. It works well. Not for everybody or all the time, but that's what we're trying to do. When we do this, functioning in this way, efficiently as it is, when it goes up, we manifest what the Buddha called craving, desire. We want that. When it goes down, we manifest what the Buddha called aversion. Two really basic forms of aversion are, one is we get angry with and mad at and aggressive about, whatever the thing is that's a problem, or the opposite, where we shrink, we're afraid of, worried about, scared of, and so on, and a whole multitude of things in between. And when it's neither going particularly up or particularly down, and it's sort of level playing field, we mostly are what the Buddha called deluded. In other words, we don't notice that part. We get all excited about the ups and all excited about the downs. Now, the next time you meet somebody on the street, your friend, or you have a conversation, how are you doing? Who you haven't seen for a little while, you don't talk about the ordinary. You talk about the ups and you talk about the downs. They're the part that you think are important and significant, where you spend all your energy trying to chase or trying to get rid of, and where we don't have to do either, we don't bother with that. We don't even notice it. It's not newsworthy. It's not energy-taking. We don't have to do anything about it, so we basically tune it right out. We miss it. We miss an enormous amount of the ordinary because we think we just dismiss it. We're sort of wired for stimulus. So these things that we do are actual options, but we don't know that they're options because that's the way we think happiness is. If we get the pleasant and get rid of the unpleasant, that'll be just hunky-dory. Well, another thing that the Buddha taught is that, this is the most basic thing that he taught, was that we live our lives stressed out a lot of the time. We're stressing because we're busily full of greed or full of aversion, because it's going up and it's going down, and we're trying to rearrange that. We want more of this, less of that. And by wanting it to be the way we want it to be, that we think will make us happy, we're counter to the way it is a lot of the time. We're either chasing or hanging on when it goes up or resisting in some way. And this stress is how we live. A lot, a lot, a lot. So this is called the first and the second noble truths. Stressed because of the wanting it to be other than it is. The third truth that he taught is that we actually don't need to do that. We could be, if we stopped wanting it to be other than it is, we would be free of the stress. Pretty simple. Makes perfect sense. But we just don't know how to do that because we're wired and we have grown these brilliant brains on a survival mode to get the pleasant and to get rid of the unpleasant. And we completely believe that. We believe in our abilities and we spend all of our endeavors in that chase. And we're exhausted. And we never quite get there. Because we're always going like, I just need to do a little bit more of chasing and a little bit more of avoiding and a bit more fixing, and then it'll be great. But not quite yet. Next week, maybe. Next year, probably. I just have to something else. We do have moments where we don't say that, where we're not in the, oh, I've just got to do something now. And we're just here. The moment I'm calling them sunset moments. You know, it's a beautiful sunset. And you go, oh. And you don't have to just do anything about it. And you're there fully with it. Well, actually, that's going on all the time. It may not be a sunset. It may be anything else. But we only have those relationships where we don't have to do anything and get it improved or modified. Only happen in moments We've all known them. But that feeling when we have a sunset moment is such a relief compared to the churning of the other moments, which are the vast majority. We could have sunset moments all the time. And the teachings and these practices are about how. And the simplest way is to not be always chasing the pleasant and avoiding the unpleasant. It's going to happen. And we need, unfortunately, the difficulty is we need to get a certain amount of pleasure. We need to get food. We need to get shelter. We need to do the things. We have to want these things. And we have to be careful and not get into trouble and not get into hostilities with people and not eat poison. And, you know, we have to avoid the pitfalls. It's not that we shouldn't do that, but we do just that. We need to be able to do that, but not just that. We need to be able to accommodate when we can't do that and it's not necessary to do that and we're trying way too hard to do that. We need to do that a little, but we do that exclusively. And that's the problem. Not doing it, but being trapped into having to do it all the time. That's the problem. The exhausting problem. So we can, by training, by understanding and by meditation, training the mind, we can discover that we can choose to let go of the number two, the cause of the stress, and go to number 3 and have a sunset moment. Way more. But to be able to make that choice, we have to have a mind that behaves itself to choose with. And our minds untrained can't make the choice. They are caught thinking what you believe. It's unpleasant. Oh, no. This is a real bummer. And now I'm worried about it. And now I've got to go through all this strategizing to not have this happen. And I'm trapped completely in that belief. And I'm spending now however much time it takes to solve that problem. And I don't know that I could do anything else because I just assume that's the way it is. And vice versa when it's a pleasure. I've got to have it. I had a phone call just yesterday from somebody. Oh, no, it wasn't a phone call. I phoned them. I got a thing in the mail, free cruise, Caribbean. And so I phoned them up because I actually don't believe in junk mail and I don't want to be solicited. So I phoned them up and they answered the phone and I told them that I had got this piece of mail that I didn't actually want. You don't want a free cruise? No, actually, I don't want a free cruise, but that's not the point. I don't want to be enticed to want something I don't want. And I don't want you to be putting paper in mails and sending them to people when I want you to remove me from the list. He could not believe that I didn't want the free cruise. He couldn't get the point. He just was like, you're kidding. And finally, when he said, I get it. And then he couldn't really get it. And I said, I just want you to take my, that's all I need you to do is take my name off your list. Wait a minute, I have to find your name and the whole, you know. And then eventually he's getting smaller, his voice. And in the end he says, it's transferable, you know. He's like, he couldn't get that we don't want free cruises. I mean, who doesn't want a free cruise? Anyway, we completely believe in free cruises. They're really, really important for happiness. I mean, of course, that's a choice, actually. So we have this neocortex and this whole strategy that we have learned our whole lives, that everybody does, that has been going on forever. So it's a very, very strong conditioning, and I call that a program. We have a program running us, chasing the good and avoiding the unpleasant. Okay. So we are learning another program. There is a much bigger program which doesn't chase and doesn't hang on and doesn't push away. It can choose and it can shop, you know, it can discriminate, it still functions, but it isn't all powerful. We can have another program that's actually a master program where we can decide, do I want this or do I not want this? Do I want the cruise or don't I want the cruise? Instead of, I have to have the cruise. Or this is awful, I can't stand it, oh no. That's a small program. We can have a bigger program that says, this is really unpleasant. Do I need to do something about this? It can ask. It can choose. There's space for choosing. To be able to choose, we have to have a mind that's our own, that's under our control, that's calmed down, and that can see what's going on. An untrained mind isn't our own, isn't calmed down, and can't see on earth what's going on because it just bounces off a little bit of this, a little bit of this. It can't see the clear picture. The mind has to be trained to settle down. It has to be trained to be in the present moment so it can actually perceive not just a moment of what's going on, but what's going on in a flow. So if we can see, and which is what we can as we meditate and why we meditate, if we can see something happens, it affects me in this way, it makes me feel like this, it makes me think of this, it makes me scheme and plan and respond, it makes my body get into a certain state, it makes my emotions respond in a certain way, and it causes a certain outcome. That's a whole pattern of stuff. It doesn't take hours to do, but it isn't just a momentary hit. We understand the unfolding of a little scenario inside us. When we can observe that, we are able to then say, is that a good thing? Is this helpful? Does that effect, response, trigger, reaction, planning, and outcome work? Does that actually feel better? And of course, what we discover is most of the time it doesn't, because we're stressed, because we're busily either chasing it or avoiding it. We don't know we're doing it, and we don't know why we're doing it, or what's causing what, or what the outcome is, and what the long-term gain or cost will be. We aren't able to perceive that. We're just dealing with this moment and reacting to this moment and chasing the next little thing. So we're very unskillful. We're just like a little kid. We're just like little puppies. You know, they just want immediate feedback and right now, and oh, something else over here, and oh, what about this over here? And we're kind of running around like that. We're not bad. We're just not very sophisticated. We think we're brilliant, but we're not that brilliant. Brilliant in certain areas. We can go to the moon and do extraordinary things. But we can't stay permanently happy. We're completely at the mercy of the ups and the downs. That's not so brilliant when it's optional. So if we train the mind, how we train the mind is first we have to gather it here. It's many puppies going off in many directions, so we have to focus all these different bits of ourselves and settle it down, patiently, gently calm it down. So that's the beginning of meditation. That's concentration meditation. It seems boring and it seems to take forever, but it's a gradual reprogramming of the brain cells. And of course, now you know they're measuring these brains and showing all this. Now it can actually be photographed. Extraordinary how they change and grow new cells and new pathways and everything. Settle it down, gather it together, settle it down. And then we also need to reassure it. Because another thing about the brain is that it's wired for trouble. One person a few years ago, neuroscientist, said, we're jumpy and nervy. And the jumpiest, nerviest people survive. And the unjumpy, nervy ones, the complacent, happy people, got eaten by the dinosaurs and didn't pass on their DNA. So we're wired to be hypervigilant, at least vigilant. And so we need to be reassured. We need to be reassured that it's safe and there are no dinosaurs and we don't have to be so on the lookout and work so hard. We can relax. So we need a certain amount of nourishment and uplift and befriending, soothing. We find that, you know, we're all needy, we're hungry, we're anxious, you know, inside. How, you know, what's your state? A lot of it is like that. When those states are reassured, are helped, are healed, the whole system can way more easily calm down and not be so jumpy and nervy. To take a jumpy, nervous thing and say, calm down and slow down and just do this one thing is really hard. But if you soothe the upset puppy first, reassure it, nourish it, feed it, make it safe, then it can really focus. So first we have to address the upset. If we're upset, if anything's disturbing us, distressing us, worrying us, undermining us, that has to be addressed. Because we can't train something that's in distress, this mind. So the very first beginning of meditation, even before I said gathering together and focusing, has to be kind to it. So we need a certain amount of that. Why we need good company, and we need to read inspiring, you know, words by inspiring people, and we need to have the company of wise ones or elders or loving whoever they are, to, you know, good friendship, so that we can calm down. Feel okay. Then when we're feeling okay, we can begin to control and train the mind, gather the mind, direct the mind, heal the mind. When I say mind, I mean not just the brain. I mean the the mind and the feeling part of the mind too, the heart. Where do I going to go next with this? The separate sense of self, the sense of me, how we all believe ourselves to be, is we mostly experience ourselves as little and separate from the rest of it. That's how we experience ourselves. I am definitely this one in this body, in this chair, and you're not me. And I have my stuff and my things and my people and my responsibilities, and you have yours, and they feel quite separate. And we can connect by speech and by other things, by touch and sharing times, but we feel quite separate. This is the way we perceive our sense of selves. This is called duality in Buddhism. It's like me and other are separate, two different things. There's the subject that can perceive the object. When you have a sunset moment, in the middle of your sunset moment, we're not thinking about anything. We're not like checking anything out. We don't even know we're there. When you're having a real full-on sunset moment, there's just the sunset. You aren't in that sense of I'm separate from the sunset and I'm separate from you and you're having a sunset moment. Are you having a sunset moment or not? We don't even think like that. We don't think. In those moments, the mind is quiet. We're quiet inside. And do you or do you not? But I would venture to say we all feel expanded. We feel bigger than the little sense of me who's concerned with herself, trying to do something. We're not doing anything about anything. We don't need to get anything. We don't need to fix anything, improve anything. We don't have to communicate anything. We don't have to anything. And in the not doing anything, we are life, just being life. And then we come back in, and now I'm little again, and I've got to now go and do something. Is that not what you experience? So this big experience, the sunset moments, are when the little sense of self goes quiet. It stops doing that. And we somehow become not dual. There is just life happening, and we're witnessing. There's consciousness of beauty. And there's peacefulness inside, and it's no thinking, no doing. That's what I mean when I say a sunset moment. It's a profound moment. It's not just a sunset moment. It's a profound shift of consciousness. It's a shift. If we could have our brains measured at the time, everything is rewiring at that time. We're in a different part of our brain even. I call this the big mind. I think of it as the wise one, the wise mind, the state that's possible for us, that we all know because we have all these moments. But that is way more accessible than we would think. When we meditate, what we're doing is first reassuring whatever that might take. Sometimes for some people that actually takes being healthy and having to have medical care taken care of. Sometimes it's psychological care we need, you know, different forms of therapy or some kinds of healing, depending on what our situation is like. But as we collect, as we calm down, as the mind settles, it's then able to look at itself, look inside its own functioning. When it looks inside its own functioning, it sees, as I told you, the patterns of behavior. What it's going to see is that inside me is healthy, appropriate, kind, respectful, quality behavior, and irritable, judgmental, reactive, fearful behavior. It's all going to be there. Stuff I'm going to like about myself, stuff I'm not going to like about myself, and stuff I don't care either way about myself. It's all going to show up. That's a challenge. And a lot of people don't want to do that. But in order to be able to get into our big minds, we have to do that. Because what we have to do is to see not just what's working, we have to see what's problematic. Because when we look closely, we see how we actually can increase the sunset moments and how we decrease them. We see what we're doing that gets in the way of the sunset. The sunset's always the sunset. Those moments are always possible. But we get in the way. Little me and my agenda of wanting this and more of that and not enough of this and complaining about that gets in the way. We need to see ourselves getting in the way. We need to see how we get in the way and what we do, what our tendencies are, and what the effect of doing it is. We need not to just see it. We need to see it and we need to feel it. So when we're being irritable, let's say, we need to feel being irritable. We need to see how that feeling generates a bunch of irritable thoughts, which generates a bunch of gnarly words, which generates a bunch of bad friends or even enemies. We need to see how that works. We also need to see the beautiful things that we do. And when we are able to stop doing something gnarly and do something generous or forgiving or let something go, we need to be able to see it functioning. Because when we can see it and feel it functioning in us, our systems will start to choose which way to do it. This doesn't happen by theory. This doesn't happen by willpower. It doesn't happen by mentally understanding what I'm saying. That helps. But if we could do it out of theory, by mentally getting it, we would already be great. We would just think our way out of trouble right away. We'd say, oh, that's silly. I'm not going to do that. And we would be fine again. But that doesn't happen. It doesn't happen because the little program is so strongly in there and we don't know we can actually choose. We haven't learned to use our minds wisely. We are being used by them. And so we're stuck. We're imprisoned. It's tragic. It's extremely costly and sometimes it's downright dangerous. It's the reason for war, the reason for all conflict, all pain. So we train the mind. First we reassure it, then we collect it, calm it, then it's able to stay longer, then it can see, and then it can understand patterns, and then as it sees behaviors and patterns, it sees choices. It finds spaces. Do I want to keep doing this? It sees the causes and effects of things and the costs, and it is able to choose for the good. We don't have to train ourselves to be nice. We already know what it is to be happy. We know that the sunset moments are preferable to neurotic moments. We don't have to teach it that. It's well understood inside us already. We're wired to be beautiful and kind and benign and peaceful beings. But we have this small mind that keeps getting in the way. So what we see is when we look at what's happening, we can see whether we're seeing purely the sunset moment or whether we're seeing my sunset and I don't like it. It's not as good as yesterday's sunset, which is getting in the way. We can see it's like looking at life with glasses on. And these glasses have layers and layers and layers. And sometimes they're really cloudy and really murky, and sometimes they're really rosy and really juicy. And they're all lenses with layers of me and my desires and my aversions and my opinions. And when we have to see them. We have to see them for what they are, layers of judgment, layers of opinion. And I'm telling a story about this person. This person just did this thing. They said this thing, and now I have a whole story about them. I put them in a whole movie, and I'm explaining it all. But that's my bias, my spin, my story. What's really going on? So as we look, we see the machinations of the mind. And as we do that, feel the cost of it. And by that process of seeing and understanding, the neurotic behavior falls away. It little by little just keeps, it'll start up, but then it'll be seen. This is ridiculous. And it just stops doing it when it's really seen. It's only when we don't know what we're doing or we're unconscious of our behavior that we can't do anything about it because we have no idea what's happening. As we watch and are aware, it can't get away with its games because we're going like, I can see that. Look at that. There's a whole story I'm running here. Just in a moment of realizing something, it just loses its. It can't run us. We go from being run by our unconscious to being in charge of our minds. In a moment, we can go from that. And then we can go right back into being unconscious again in the next moment. But we start to be able to see all this. We're not looking to try and find it even. All we're doing in the practice is training the mind to calm down and be present. And then it starts seeing all this behavior. And it feels it, doesn't just see it. We can feel the tension that we normally don't know is there because it's so normal, we can't tell. But you start feeling, oh, compared to a sunset moment, I just had a sunset moment, and now there's this, my head's going forward, my fingers are getting tight again, I'm frowning a bit more, I'm now pushing back into something. And when I'm not, I'm back, I'm relaxed, my face is smooth again. We start to experience the different states associated with what's going on by being present, by being with yourself and knowing it. Through that experience is the only way we can actually choose more wisely, through living it. So meditation is, we start off by doing this odd thing, sitting still and watching your breath. But what we're doing frees us, transforms us, frees us from being the victim of our neurosis, basically. Can you remember exactly the title of this weekend retreat, Sandra? Can you read it?
So it's entitled Yourself, Caring for It and Letting It Go.
Yourself, Caring for It and Letting It Go. We have to, thank you. I knew what I was teaching, but I wanted to hear what the actual words were. Care for it. We can't just, this separate sense of self, which gets in the way of us and a sunset experience, isn't a bad thing. It isn't an enemy. It's a fully functional part of being on this plane. It's beautiful, actually. But it's not the only way. I think the main point I like to give is that we have this capacity to be way bigger than that way. That way works to a degree, but is limited. And in order to have more sunset moments where we experience life beyond the small, we can't just annihilate the small. We can't say, this is bad, I don't want it anymore. This is anything wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with being the separate self that we are. But it isn't deeply happy. It isn't deeply peaceful. In the moment that we have deep well-being, a sunset moment, it's not operational. To have it not be operational more frequently, we must befriend it. We must train it. We must reassure it. One of the practices that I like teaching, I just was down in California last week teaching of 7 days of loving kindness or friendliness practice. All day, people were wishing themselves well, wishing the world well, wishing different beings well. Just occupying themselves all day, hour after hour, with friendliness and kindness and blessings and good wishes. All day. And they weren't noticing their breath particularly or their bodies particularly. It's extraordinary to be able to do that like that. But that really brings a sense of being your own dear friend. Because when we sit there with ourselves, as soon especially we see anything that's not so great about ourselves, we don't like ourselves. We get so down on ourselves. And I know that this is in our society a lot. But it's really hard to have sunset moments when you don't like yourself. They don't go together. You can't have them. In the moment that you have a moment that's lovely, the sunset sets there and you're peaceful, you're not down on yourself. You're not afraid. You're not complaining. You're not busy trying to fix anything. None of that happens. Yourself is soothed. Yourself is relaxed. The sense of who you are is peaceful, is content. We have them more when we're in nature, when it's beautiful, after supper, when we've just been given a kiss on the cheek. Oh, look at the sunset, All those things help. So that's why we have to do that ourselves. We can't depend on circumstance to care for ourselves because circumstance is going up and down. And so we ourselves need to nourish ourselves. We need to be kind to ourselves. We need to give ourselves some space. We need to have boundaries. We need to take ourselves to retreats. We need to eat healthy food. We need to be around people, not get exhausted, not get neurotic, not have too many people telling us that we ought to have free cruises. We need to take care of our own inner health in order to be able to understand ourselves. And only when all of that has happened can we release this sense of me, this precious sense of me which really believes I have to still get it together. I have to reorganize this. I have to get this handled. When we're more peaceful, when we're more friendly with ourselves, it's much easier to just say, it's fine. It's okay. It's raining. Without it being a struggle. So when this morning in one of the groups, somebody was talking about wanting to talk with me and what I would say about it being hard to practice meditation in daily life, hard to maintain regular practice. And I answered her by saying that we need to want to. And to want to do meditation on top of all the other things that we need to get done means that's one more task to have to attend to. And the other things often seem more pressing and more immediate and more somehow important. If we can have the relationship of our training ourselves, having our inner life, our meditation time, our reflective time, be delicious, be enjoyable, be pleasurable, we will want to do it. It won't be one more task we have to add on to all the other tasks and then get forgotten at the end of the day. So I really think we need to enjoy meditation. We need to, when we sit, relish the quiet, for one thing. Relish the fact that you don't have to do anything else right now. You don't have to be responsible for anything or worried about anything or have to fix anything. Take it as time away from all that neurotic behavior. That's the rest of our lives, which is most of our lives. Give yourself a holiday. It's a relief. And one of the ways to do that is to actually experience the pleasure of sitting. Now, I was looking, I look at the room. When I'm teaching a retreat and people are meditating, you're all sitting there quietly with your eyes closed in your little world, some of you in Paris, some of you wherever you are. And I watch your faces and your body language because I can't tell you what's going on inside, but there are smiles on people's faces and there are frowns on people's faces. And you're struggling or you're not. I encourage you to smile when you meditate. I encourage even just by, they do this, I mean, I believe this anyway, but we have brain science to back it up now and all these measurements, but they do studies. When people's faces are smiling, their minds are more serene. You can induce a serene mind by smiling. Even if you don't feel like smiling, even if you just smile a little bit, it'll change how your brain is. They find this measure. I've told you this before. There was this study where they made half the subjects look at a cartoon picture, which is supposed to be funny. Okay, it was a funny cartoon picture. I don't know what it was. They made half the subjects look at this picture with a pen between their teeth. That's a false smile. It's a very minimal smile, but it nevertheless is smiling from the brain's point of view. And the other half of the subject had a look at the picture with the pen in their mouths held between their lips. They couldn't smile. And they look at the same picture. And the ones with it in their teeth find it hilariously much more funny than the ones who can't smile. Simple little thing. If we can think of our practice time as nourishment, as relief, as enjoyable, as peaceful, as friendly. It's not another fix-it thing. It's not another, you know, project to get yourself in shape. It's not a thing to achieve. It's time away from achieving and fix-its and the small mind and all of its little busyness. It's time away from that. It's time to rest in the sunset. Just be quiet. Just be with the simple bigness of the moment coming and going. You can step outside your little busy self with its agenda, always trying to improve things, which is stressful, and you can just be. As much as you can do that in your day, as many moments as you can throughout your day, including sitting on a cushion, you are rewiring the brain. You're growing different cells in the brain. You're growing the cells of the big mind. And it grows. It's a learnable thing. It's a trainable, effective thing. So we need to be kind to ourselves, give ourselves quiet. We need to see every time we're sitting quietly, peacefully, minding our own business in meditation, and then something occurs and, oh, I've got to remember to do so and so. Oh, off we go. We have to notice that. Notice not just that we're doing it, but that's stressful. And say, later. And be quiet. And be simple. There's many, many different supporting, I was going to say, skills for this. A great skill is to count your blessings. Just take some time and think about what's good for you in your life. We do tend to go for the problems. And reassure yourself. Be grateful for whatever it is. We have so much to be grateful for. I mean, everyone does everywhere, but we really have. Another one is to, these are ways to gladden the heart, it's called, the Buddha talked about this, is to not just be grateful for the blessings you have, but also appreciate yourself. If you can appreciate your goodness, your decency, your honesty, the times when you are good, they don't have to be all the time. We all know we're not perfect. We're not like this all the time, but we've got plenty of good things going on inside ourselves. When we've made a better choice, when we've restrained ourselves, when we've actually been thoughtful and kind, the gifts we give, the times we have to listen to people. Some of us are really great listeners. Appreciate yourself. As you do that, you can relax and there's more sunsets. It's very simple. We just aren't wired to do it this way. We're so busy looking at the world and trying to see if it's going up or going down and if it's going to be more comfortable or less comfortable. We're not looking at how we are with it. Because it's not about whether it goes up or down. I know I sound like I've just been saying the same thing over and over and over. I've been teaching for 11 years. I say the same thing all the time. We know it, but we don't really get it. It's not about whether it goes up or down. It's whether you're okay with whether it goes up or down. It's going to go up or down. If you have to have it going up and you don't want to have it going down, you're doomed. If you're okay with, oh, it's going up now. Oh, this is lovely. Oh, it's going down now. Oh, okay, it's changing again. Now it's going down. Oh, this isn't so nice. Now it's going up. That's all. It's going to do that. But if it's like, oh, no, this is wrong. What can we do? Help, help. Quick, fix it. Get more of this, then we are running ourselves ragged. All in the name of feeling better. That's what's sad about it, is that it's not bad, it just is trying to be happy when all it needs to do is stop it, and then it'll be happy. It's so ironic. The real happiness that we want, mind you, we think we want great happiness. And of course, all of the media is trying to convince us that we want not just a little row around the lake. We need a free cruise in the Caribbean. It's extremes that we think, you know, we're really happy. Well, really and truly, all we want, it isn't even the Caribbean. We want the feeling of peacefulness inside. We think that it'll come when we don't have to pay money and we're in some apparently heavenly place. Caribbean is no more heavenly than Canada. It's not the place, it's not the cruise, it's not the event, it's the feeling inside where we're content. We can be content with anything. We don't go running around half around the world and accumulate huge thises and thats in order to be content. We mistakenly think it's in the objects. It's not, it's in how we then feel when we have something. I had the sweetest moment just a little while ago of great contentment. I have to just pass on my gratitude because I just ate a Lindt milk chocolate. Somebody knows me well enough to know that my favorite chocolate in the world is Swiss, and that even milk, maybe they didn't know, maybe it was a guess, but whoever gave me my chocolates as a little treat on my chair, thank you. It was this little secret gift, I don't know. But that brings such contentment. I'm not a chocolate addict, by the way, but one little here and there. I don't have to have a free cruise for that feeling. It's so simple. So look for the things that cheer you about yourself, in your life around you. And the other thing that really helps reassure the mind, because we took care for the self so that the mind can be trained, it's got to be soothed, is to think that soothing is possible. I know this sounds silly, but if we really keep reminding ourselves that I don't have to be frustrated, I don't have to be angry, I can be content really quickly and really easily, providing I train my mind. Isn't that a gift? So we can be grateful for being able to train the mind and discover the more we do it, the better behaved it is, and then the happier it is. That is an amazing blessing. And that we know how to do it. And there are people who teach it, and my mind knows I can make it do these things, and it will. The reflection of the benefit of practice, the benefit of having this is the oldest practice, this is the oldest official religious practice, not that Buddhist calls itself a religious, but inner sacred practice that's known to man. I mean, I'm sure there are some in the hills of Borneo that no one has ever heard about that may be the same as they've been for 12,000 years, so I don't know, but worldwide that's known about, this is the oldest one, 2,600 years, same practice. Still going strong. So it works, because that's why it's going strong. That's uplifting, I think. That makes me cheerful, grateful, happy. So these things are really worth pursuing to reassure and care for ourselves. And then what happens, as you keep doing it and you keep watching, you see the little self congealing. You feel the stress of that, the tightness of that, the push of that, or the shrink of that. And it just gets seen through in a moment, and it just stops doing it. Something breaks. It's like we're inside an eggshell or a bubble almost, like we're inside a bubble. And that the walls of the bubble just pop, and we're not confined. I should talk more about that tomorrow. That's tomorrow's talk. How do you pop your walls of your bubble? That's the letting go of the sense of self. To begin with, we have to do this. Be kind and train and calm and gather and collect and see all of what we're seeing. And then tomorrow I'll talk about how we let go. But until we are together and whole, which is healthy and healed and whole, whole, are all the same root. Until we are whole and collected and okay, we can't let anything go. This little mind is going to keep on busily spinning its wheels, trying to make us feel okay. We need to feel okay first before we can think about letting ourselves go. So however, whatever we need to give that to ourselves in the way of positive, friendly, understanding, nourishment. And then these magic sunset moments start popping all over the place.